Hello, everyone, and welcome to Words on a Wedding, the podcast that sees me, your host, Annie Bisher, interview my wonderful guests about their big day. Together, we talk all things proposals, planning, the ceremony, the fashion, the first dance, and beyond. No wedding-related stone is left unturned. So whether you're planning your own wedding, you simply love wedding chat, or like me, you're a not-so-newlywed who just can't let that wedding world go, hit subscribe on Words on a Wedding, play on the episode, and get stuck in. So my guest today is seasoned beauty and lifestyle editor Lily Worcester, known most recently for her work at the institution that is Tatler magazine. So Lily's wedding quite literally made headlines in 2021. And in this episode, we'll be delving into all the need-to-know details that made Lily's nuptials noteworthy. I know I've told you this before, but I put the kettle on, I made a piping hot mug of tea, especially to sit down and stalk the life out of your wedding on Instagram. As soon as those first stories hit, I was there. So on behalf of my fellow wedding aficionados, thank you so much for the content. But let's rewind for a second, because we need to set the scene. So who did you marry and how did you meet?
So I married the gorgeous Will van der Spar, who I met at uni. We met at a pub in Leeds called The Library, and we started dating in second year, and yeah, we were 21, and here we are 10 years on.
And talk me through the proposal.
Oh, the proposal. We were in Vietnam. We were staying at the Hotel Anantara in Quy Nhon. And Will had sort of decided he was going to plan a whole day of fun and activities. And I just thought, great, you know, really proactive. We went on a little boat, had some snacks, visited a little island. Then we came back to the hotel, had an afternoon of massages. It was heaven. And then we got ready for dinner. And we walked to the restaurant, and the waiter sort of showed us through to the restaurant and then through the restaurant and out the back of the restaurant. And then we were on the beach where there was no restaurant. And then we sort of like wiggled through the sort of bushes. And then there was a sort of clearing right on the beach where they had set up a sort of little little gazebo and a table. And, you know, we had, you know, lobster and champagne and my favorite cocktail. And then, you know, after the starter, he popped the question with his granny's engagement ring, which was so sweet. And then we just got drunk on the beach all night. And like, I remember taking photos of, like, I put the ring on like my baby toe, and was just like sending them to everyone in London. And we just had the best night. And actually it was quite fun because of the time difference. We couldn't sort of call anyone, which was fun because we were just in our own little bubble, own little world for the night and then the morning. And then by lunchtime, then we were ready to call everyone.
That's so good, because as soon as you open those floodgates, that's you for the next 24 hours, isn't it? On and off FaceTime.
Yeah, exactly.
We would never knock it. That's the most beautiful thing ever, but it's so precious to have those moments just beforehand. Did you, in that time before you were telling everyone, did you even talk about what your wedding was going to be like? When did you start the first steps of planning, and what vision did you have for your wedding?
I mean, I was definitely always one of those girls that had been sort of fantasizing about the dream wedding. Like, I look back at my parents' albums, like, their wedding was so epic, and my mum's dress was designed by David Emmanuel, who designed Princess Diana's wedding dress, and it was just like a big white 80s wedding in like the best possible way. And I just wanted that like big energy. So I always knew I wanted it to be, I just always knew I wanted like an event. I wanted a big, and I'd always discussed with Will getting married, but we had never discussed any kind of detail. But luckily he was on my way. He was happy to just do with what I wanted to do. He was up for anything. And I knew I had my one moment, and I wanted to have like a big white dress and loads of people and just a huge, huge party. I suppose for us, it was the deciding where we were going to get married, like the venue. And we'd flirted with a few different ideas of maybe having it at my parents' house in Surrey. I sort of had a vision of a winter wedding. I loved the sort of drama that a winter wedding brings. Like, I love I love how the guests dress. I love that everyone can get out their diamonds and sort of and go like ultra glam. And then with the venue, my priorities were I wanted somewhere that we could party all night. And actually in the UK, so many wedding venues have time restrictions. Some of them ridiculous. Some of them, you know, they have these incredible old houses in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, you still have these sort of midnight curfews. And I really wanted the option to be able to just dance the night away for as long as we wanted to. So I wanted a sort of unlimited party situation. I needed somewhere that was wheelchair accessible. My dad's in a wheelchair. And I obviously I wanted it to look really beautiful. So those were sort of my three priorities. And then we sort of had a look around Cowdrey House, which is a beautiful historic house in Sussex. I cannot tell you how blown away we were. It was, A, it's spectacular. B, they are so chilled. It's, you can basically sort of move in, pretend it's your house for the weekend, have the party of your life, and they're just up for anything. And, you know, me and Will were the last people to go to bed at 5:30 in the morning. And everyone else, because there was loads of rooms. We had all of our best friends and family all stay in the house. So everyone had slowly made their way to bed. Me and Will then went to the main drawing room, helped ourselves to some of the cheese that we didn't have time to, and just like sat on these grand sofas in this grand drawing room with me in my wedding dress, him, I think, like maybe topless or something, and then like shoeless, and just being like, what just happened? I had this overwhelming feeling during my wedding. If I went to bed, my wedding day is over. So I was like, if I just don't go to bed.
And how did you, were there anything, because you were so on it, like you said, you'd had this vision and then you got this insane venue, which basically gave you carte blanche for whatever you wanted to do. Did you kind of, you know, steer the ship for the rest of the planning, or did you divvy up whether certain areas that he wanted to really handle?
I mean, our whole planning was a bit unconventional and annoying because of COVID. So we got married in 2009. We got engaged in October 2019. And obviously at that point, nobody knew. So we were like, great, let's get planning and thinking. We hadn't actually booked anything. And then obviously by the time the new year came, things were looking a bit bleak. We were sort of tentatively trying to put things on hold without putting deposits down, or we would put deposits down and sort of say, but we have to be able to change it if there's COVID. And we were planning on getting married in 2020. And then as the year went on, we were like, look, let's just push it back another year. So we ended up having a 2-year engagement, which wasn't the plan, but thankfully it was all fine. And then actually there were no masks or anything at our wedding. Like, it was a very relaxed. But then actually the week later, it all erupted again. And actually I had sort of friends that were getting married that following week, and they had a sort of 40% dropout rate because people were ill or had COVID and stuff. So,
because of what your wedding is visually in my head, I completely forget that it was anywhere near COVID.
In my mind, I would have preferred to wait than to have it be a sort of mask situation. But
of course.
No, we were so lucky actually with the timing in the end. The planning was unconventional, but to be honest, once we had the venue, suddenly the vision comes a bit clearer and you can start to slot everything else into place. You know, and like these venues often have stockists that they, you know, they had their selection of caterers, their selection of production people, which wasn't a bad thing because their selection of caterers, they had sort of 13 options of caterers, and I had heard of loads of them. I'd eaten lots of the food from events, so it wasn't, that wasn't a problem. And, but it, in a way, it almost helped you sort of whittle down the options a bit. There were a few stockists that honestly made the whole planning experience glorious. And for me, those were Caper and Berry, who were our caterers, but they were so much more than caterers. Yes, the food was exquisite, but even the way they laid out the cheese was like a work of art. Even the way they managed everyone else in the team was just incredible. They organized there to be mulled wine and mulled cider at the church when our guests arrived, sort of turning that moment where people are just hanging around waiting into this fun moment. And that was great. And then the other incredible stockist that we worked with was Gigi Print, who did all of our invitations, order of service, and everything like that. And they were just so creative, and I had all these weird and wonderful ideas, and they were just happy to experiment and created some seriously cool stuff.
And then we have to talk about your dress. So let's dedicate as much time as possible to this, because this isn't just a simple question of how did you hit on your dress? Where did you get your dress? Like, lovely Lily. This is a huge, huge part of your wedding. Talk me through this.
Oh, well, I mean, I started off, like I think lots of brides start off, by going to the famous boutiques, which is a really fun way to, I think, start the journey. And I went with my sister and my mom and my best girlfriend, and we had such a fun day, you know, doing the whole champagne lunch at Chilton and trying on all these dresses, and none of them were for me. But sometimes, you know, trying on the ones that aren't for you can be equally important, because you figure out what you want. And then I think, you know, a lot of these very, you know, incredible designers that we looked at were quite strict with how much you were allowed to tweak of their designs. So I sort of would say, oh, can we get this top and put it on this bottom? And a lot of the designers that I had seen up until that point were like, oh, you know, no, we don't really do that. And if we do that, it's going to be a sort of year lead time. And we were sort of in summer before the December wedding, because of COVID, that's just where we were. So I thought that was loads of time, but actually a lot of the bridal boutiques told me that it's not much time. Anyway, so I've always been obsessed with Richard Quinn. I think he's just a total visionary. I'd interviewed him when I was at the Evening Standard, when he first made headlines for having a fashion show where the Queen was sitting front row next to Anna Wintour, and his clothes are spectacular. And he just struck me as just being someone that could do anything. And he's actually since, you know, in the last couple of years, he's done lots more bridal. But at that point, he hadn't done much bridal at all. He'd done one show where they had sort of hinted at it, and they'd had sort of bridesmaids kind of in the show. And anyways, we just would go speak to him. And we went to his studio. Me and my mum went to his studio in Peckham and met with him and his right-hand woman, Jenny. And we were just blown away. Like, they were so inspiring. And when I was like, oh, do you think you could do something like this? They were looking at me like, yeah, of course we can do that. We can do anything. We can do anything at all. And just the studio itself was so cool. It was, I think he's since moved studios to a bigger studio, but it was sort of like under the arches in Peckham. And there were all these seamstresses like working on these dresses that were just so spectacular. And it was just so cool. We started trying on all of his designs. I had all these crazy patterns, and I loved some of the stars. I said, but, you know, could you do this in white? They're like, yeah, of course we can. They pulled out all of their sort of sparkling white fabrics. And honestly, the wedding dress experience for me was just the highlight of the whole planning. Like, we had so much fun. We would go every month or so to Peckham, you know, the latest version. And it actually wasn't, the final version wasn't ready until the Friday of the wedding, and I hadn't seen the finished copy ever.
You're brave. I mean, that's a testament to how much trust you put in him, right?
You know, he's so used to working to a deadline that you can't suddenly not have a dress ready for a show or for a celebrity doing the red carpet. So I figured that it might be down to the wire, but I have total confidence that it will be delivered. Actually, I ended up having two dresses. I wanted the dress that he had designed, but then I wanted a dress which was, by the way, sort of a huge, ridiculous train that went to the end of the tiny village church that we got married in. It had this beautiful, sparkling sort of corset and this like Duchess satin skirt, but it wasn't very practical, and I did want to dance a night away. So he made another version, an identical version, that just went to my ankles. So I could keep this insane dress all day, but then I could also dance in it. So there were two different dresses. And then, so on the Friday before the wedding, I had sent my girlfriend to Peckham to collect it and a van. When she arrived, they were still all sewing away. And she waited there for like 3 hours while it was being finished. And then her and the two dresses got in the van, drove to Cowdrey in Sussex. And she missed the dress rehearsal. Not the dress rehearsal. what do they call it when you practice getting married? Just the rehearsal.
Yeah, the rehearsal, the church rehearsal. Yeah,
the dress rehearsal. Oh my god! You can see where
I mean, her heart rate must have been through the roof. I can't even imagine. And for those of you who haven't seen Lily's dress, I can't even describe. I mean, you obviously will see it on social and everything, but for me, it was just this, you were just this siren in this kind of Tudor-esque corset silhouette made modern. It's indescribable, really, because I don't think anybody had seen anything like it until then. It's just so beautiful. And didn't he, probably in his most recent show, was this kind of nostalgic tribute, right, to his kind of mom and things like this, and it just kind of shows how much love and joy he pours into everything he does, and that really came across in your wedding dress. I feel
he was just such a spectacular energy to work with. Like, he was making dresses for sort of every household name while he was making mine, and the fact that he puts so much, you know, every appointment was with Richard. There was no, you know, team that I was sort of given to. It was all with him, and he was so generous. You know, in this one fashion show, they had all these children walk the runway, and he gave me some of those dresses to wear to give to my flower girls, my bridesmaids. So the little bridesmaids were wearing these little mini Richard Quinns, and then we had a couple of page boys, and they used that fabric and made little shorts for the little boys to wear, all in this floral Richard Quinn fabric. I mean, it was so cool.
And what was your brief? I'm interested.
If I was going to look at like my mood board, there was no two dresses that looked the same. They were all just quite statement making. And so when I came to Richard, I didn't have anything really specific except for the fact I still wanted it to look bridal. I still wanted the white dress. I still wanted it to look flattering, but I didn't want it so sort of fashion forward that it had like a really quirky silhouette that maybe wasn't that flattering, even though it was very cool. I wanted something that was still like a sort of a flattering dress and a sort of white dress. And then we just started trying on his pieces. And then he was like, okay, well, that waist is good. That skirt is good, but maybe we make the skirt much longer. And then we tried on different like tops that just he already had and different corsets, and it was like slowly piecing it all together. And then, you know, they make the mock-up, and then you try that on and they tweak that again.
You must have been the dream client, because you clearly went in with such an open mind and kind of open to being it, to just to be a hugely collaborative experience.
Yeah, and he was just so flexible. And sometimes I was like, you tell me, Richard, you tell me what you think. Like, you don't. He's like, I can do anything you want. And I was like, no, you tell me.
And then once you've got the dress sorted, I imagine that's when you spring into thinking about your hair and makeup. So how did you get into that?
Hair and makeup. So Larry King has been my hair guru for years and years and years. So I was just desperate for him to help me, you know, obviously cut my hair in the months running up, and also you know, do my hairstyle on the day, which he did, which was amazing. And it was such an honor to have him there. We went for so I've got very long hair, sort of waist long hair. And I think I find that my hair can sometimes look a little bit boho because of the nature of the venue and the dress. I really didn't want like sort of relaxed boho hair. I wanted it to be sort of chic and glamorous. So we went for this sort of straight, very straight hair that was curled at the sort of rounded off at the bottom, but very, very straight. And then to add further, but again, the nature of my hair anyway is that towards the ends, it gets quite thin and wispy. So I had a lot of extensions put in, not to add length, but to just add thickness to the ends. And so it really just made it look like my hair was just as thick at the bottom as it was at the top. And I had the amazing Vicky from Larry King, who's really such an expert at extensions. She added those extensions in, and that really helped it, the whole thing just look really slick. And then when I changed out of my big dress and took off my veil, I changed my hair into a sort of mermaid waves, which was just a bit more playful. And I sort of took off my mum's earrings and put on some like costume jewelry, and it had the mermaid waves to match that sort of more playful vibe. And then for makeup, I had Kay Montano do my makeup, who's just the most extraordinary makeup artist. And she used lots of lovely Chanel products. And like a lot of brides, I just wanted to look like myself, but just better. But, you know, I do have a lot of friends talk to me about bridal makeup, because, I mean, it is such an art, because there's the balance of you want to really look like yourself, and you don't want to look overdone, because you want to look in real life. You want to look really good. You want to get to the, you know, end of the aisle and for your husband to recognize you. But then at the same time, you want enough makeup that you get really good in pictures and that it looks really polished in pictures. So there's a sort of balance. There's a sort of balance that's quite hard to get right. And Kay, being such a pro, crushed it. And on my nails, I had Harriet Westmoreland do a sort of sparkly French manicure. So it was just sparkly tips and then, you know, French. And because it was a sort of Christmas wedding, ultimately, that worked quite well. And for those that don't know, like, Harriet Westmoreland is nail legend, really.
She is a nail legend. She is the queen of the micro French tip. She's done, I don't know how many ridiculous icons. Yeah, she's a big name. She's a big name. And then obviously your beauty credentials, we have to dig into skincare and treatments you sorted out in the lead up. I mean, did you factor any of those in? Was that a priority for you?
So I think the nature of being a beauty editor, as I'm sure you can understand, is that sometimes my treatments can be a bit sporadic, just because I'm trying to try everything that's coming out that's new and interesting. But I sort of really tried to just get into a good routine. And I just saw Teresa Tami for sort of 8 months before the wedding, really committed to regular microneedling with her red light. And honestly, my skin transformed having that regular monthly treatment. It was really, and then actually I was so lucky that Teresa came. Teresa Tami, like a facialist to the stars, you know, she'll go to the Oscars and she'll be treating, you know, some of the most famous faces before they go down the red carpet or the Met or wherever it is. She actually came to Calgary as well and gave me a sort of pre-red carpet facial before having my makeup done, just to give me extra sculpted cheekbones and jaw. And I would recommend, I mean, if budget allows, I'd recommend that everyone should go see a trichologist before their wedding, because I was just blown backwards by the results of visiting Ricardo Villanova. And a trichologist is a sort of hair and scalp expert. To be honest, I went to see him originally for work. I was interviewing him and I was trialing a treatment for work. I personally didn't think I'd get a huge amount out of it, because I haven't had any huge sort of hair problems. I haven't experienced hair loss and or hair thinning or anything like that. So I sort of thought I was going purely for work. He sort of analyzed my scalp and analyzed my hair. You know, I have, obviously, like everyone, I've always had a few sort of, you know, my hair's never been very shiny. And, you know, I do get quite a lot of split ends. And it turns out that there was a very specific reason why my hair was not shiny and a very specific reason why I was getting split ends. And he could see all that. And so he prescribed this sort of 6 months treatment of regular microneedling on my scalp, these sort of protein treatments. And I mean, the treatment itself is insanely relaxing, but also my hair transformed.
That's so interesting. I've never had that mentioned on the podcast before, but it does make sense that, you know, people on the day of their wedding will see sort of the kind of condition of their skin and condition, they're kind of equal priorities, but it's skincare that you really think to unless you're getting your hair colored or anything like that, to think about in the long term before your wedding. But it's so interesting to hear about somebody who's kind of invested that time in doing the same for their hair, and it clearly sort of paid dividends.
Yeah, no, it really did.
And then how did you scent your wedding?
I've had a sort of long time love for Jo Malone. I've always just had an affinity with Jo Malone. And so they were the first people I went to when trying to figure out what I wanted to wear, how I wanted the rooms to smell. So at Jo Malone, they do a lovely sort of bridal experience where they sort of talk you through all their perfumes. And I ended up going for a combination of the English Pear and Freesia with the Velvet Rose and Oud. That combination was, for me, truly intoxicating. The Velvet Rose and Oud just gave it that like deep, sexy, wintry sort of glamour. And then I ended up using both those candles in the church, in the reception, and at the dinner. And I lit them both while I was getting dressed. So we had the whole day, including me, smelt like this English Pear and Freesia and Velvet Rose and Oud. And I mean, as you'll know, Annie, every fragrance expert will tell you that it's pick a new scent for your wedding day means that when later in life, in the future, you wear that scent, you're immediately brought back to that day. You know, maybe it's a more fun way of doing it than just using the perfume that you wear every day that you might associate with work or with, you know, sort of doing the dishes. Whenever I smell specifically the Velvet Rose Oud, I'm just brought back straight back to my wedding day, and I still light the candles on my anniversary. And I actually lit the candles at my daughter's christening, just because it's now just such a sort of sacred scent for me.
Sacred is the best word, I think, for this. It's so true. And there is something poetic in that, obviously specifically for you, but sure, was it about a year or so later, didn't Jo Malone London do a collaboration with Richard Quinn?
That was really magical, actually. I went to a lunch to celebrate the collaboration between Richard Quinn and Jo Malone. Richard was there, Jo Malone was there. I was 6 months pregnant, and I just walked up to Richard, and he was like, oh my gosh, look at you. Such a funny coincidence.
Really beautiful. And so now talk me through a day in the life of your wedding day, sort of from the morning of, you know, your rehearsal was the night before, right? So that was when your poor bridesmaid was waiting on that dress and freaking out, but arrived with the van, everybody's there, everybody's present and correct. What's happening? When does the ceremony start? What's the build-up like? Talk me through the day.
So we all arrive at Cowdery. So I'll take you to the day before. We all arrive at Cowdery the day before. We have the rehearsal, not dress rehearsal, the rehearsal. and then we have a beautiful dinner just with some ushers and family. And then we did have a few drinks and we did go to the bowling alley downstairs, but me and Will didn't want to stay in the same room, but we both wanted to make the most of this beautiful house. So he went to one wing and I went to another wing, and I shared a bed with my sister. Actually, I'd recommend this to anyone. Our alarm to wake us up was like going to the chapel, and it just got us in the mood straight away. Anyway, and then I've got my goddaughter and her sister who are sort of 7 and 8 or something. They like climbed into our bed in the morning, and then my mum came in. And I don't know if the champagne started just then, but it was so indulgent. We were playing all the bridal music, like dancing on the bed. It was heaven. I didn't have many people in the room with me. It was just, I think, 3 girlfriends, my sister, my mum, and my little goddaughter and her sister, who are the flower girls. And so first thing, I had my facial with Therese Atami, which was incredible. There was a sort of breakfast laid out downstairs. Then we had 2 breakfasts set up, one for the girls, one for the boys. We had sort of picked at breakfast, and then after breakfast the hair and makeup started. And I honestly thought that we would have lots of time to spare, maybe time to go for a walk, but we really didn't. One thing that I hadn't thought of, but it all worked out, is that when you are picking someone to be in the room and getting ready with you to do your hair and your makeup, of course it's important that they're doing an amazing job, but you've also got to have someone that's got the right energy. You can't have like a stress head with you, or like a diva, or so you want, I think, to pick the experts that are really relaxed.
Yeah, and especially when the setting's so as intimate as it was for you, any one person can totally change the tone or the kind of energy in that room.
Totally. And, you know, Larry and Teresa and Kay were so, you know, they're such pros, and it was such an incredible atmosphere. And then we started drinking the champagne, and then we got the dress on and we went to the church. It was one thing I forgot to bring to the church, which I didn't realize at the church, on the way back from the church. And it was only when we were doing photos after the church that the photographer went, "Do you have a bouquet?" And I was like,
"No.
Oh no, it's my room."
No.
So all the pictures.
Oh my God.
I don't know what I thought I was doing with my hands. They were just resting by my side. Anyway. But I didn't bring my bouquet.
Oh my God, I never knew that.
you almost want to make sure that you have like a sort of checklist of things to remember.
Yeah. Also, no, so more so somebody else has one. One of your bridesmaids, somebody.
And I could see like, wow. I think my sister was quite upset because, you know, she sort of thought that responsibility should have been maybe hers.
Oh, no.
And it was fine. I've got them for all the pictures, the family and stuff. But no, we had the, there was like a very sweet local church in a town called Tillington. It was just fabulous. And Will, my husband's family are all musicians. You know, Will's dad's been the head cellist at the Royal Opera House for 45 years. His aunt's been head violinist at the New York Philharmonic. Will's mum was a musician, so we had lots of them playing at the wedding, which is really special.
That's so special.
After that, we had the, you know, the big family portraits.
Who was photographing your wedding?
We had this amazing photographer called Alex Lloyd. He's sort of quite traditional, and I just wanted a look that would be quite timeless. And he had, you know, an assistant, and they were great, and I was so happy. It was quite, yeah, I think it was just quite traditional. The family photos do take quite a long time, so I did sort of turn to my mum at one point, being like, "Oh, should we just sack this off? You know, it's all taking a little bit long." And she was like, "You're never going to have these people in one room again." So, and actually, it is so special having those pictures, and I would recommend doing some of those family lineup. You know. Just because, I mean, for me, I was so lucky to have so many of my grandparents there, and just having like both sets of grandparents like in one photo, and both sets of parents, all the siblings, like it's really special. So they're some of my most precious photos, actually. So and then there was an amazing reception, sort of drinks and canapes. And then I went and changed into my second dress. And then everyone made their way to their seats for dinner. And then we came out to the Proclaimers, "I'm Gonna Be 5,000 Miles," which was so fun. And, you know, we literally came out dancing, went all the way around. And I just felt, actually, we started off on a sort of, on like a bit of a stage above everyone.
Like a mezzanine, like a walkway.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. And then came down and danced. Honestly, I felt like a rock star. It was the most... And I hadn't actually even thought of like a walk-in music. And then we spoke to some of our friends. I said, "What was the highlight of your wedding?" And they said it was walking in and having that music and everyone was singing. That was their highlight. And so I suddenly said to Will, I was like, "Oh my God, we've got to pick an amazing song and walk in and make it a whole moment." And we did. And it was so fun. You know, we had some crackers on the tables. And one of the highlights of our wedding was at the end of dinner. So we had the menus, and on the front of the menu, it just had the food. And then inside the menu, it opened up like a book, and inside it had the lyrics to 12 Days of Christmas. Will and the MC went to the front. We got some guys from the band in, and we had numbered our tables 1 to 12 so that everyone had a verse. And then we sang 12 Days of Christmas, and that was possibly the highlight of my day.
That's absolute genius. So everyone had a part, everyone had a day. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, as the, you know, everyone would sort of stand up, sing their bit, sit down, and it was raucous. And it actually, sometimes I find at weddings sometimes the dinner can be a bit of like a calmer moment, like a more chill moment before the dancing. Whereas yeah, I sort of was quite,
yeah.
Well, I was quite keen to like keep the energy going, and this kept the energy going. And then we went straight from that to the dancing, and it just meant that everyone was like raring to go.
Oh my God. It looked insane. And talk me through, because the tables were a vision, like a real statement setup, right?
I mean, they were very pink, and I wanted it to just be Christmassy and pink. And we had the flowers by Grandi Rosa, who are incredible. And they're famous for having these sort of peeled back roses. That's what they're famous for. These sort of peeled back roses, and it sort of almost makes the roses look quite sculptural. And so they're really colourful, quirky, sort of edited flowers. A bit of orange, a bit of blue, lots of pink. None of it was too high. I was very keen for it to stay low so people could chat over the table. Lots of little different kinds of glasses. The tablecloth was pink. The napkin was pink. And then we made these bespoke crackers, and pattern on the crackers matched the order of service in the church, which matched the invitations. Which actually matches my wallpaper in my bedroom.
I love that. The detail is incredible.
Yeah, no, then we had a little shot of something inside. And, you know, as a bride, you can get a bit, I became obsessed with the small detail. I love it. I became obsessed. Mm-hmm. So I found myself even calling in like 5 different options of gold paper hats for the crackers, like crowns, being like, what's the chicest gold? What's the chicest gold?
That is a prime example of how into it, how in depth you can get when you're in that wedding world.
I know, looking back on it, I lost the plot, but...
But it's all for that one person at the table who will sit there and say, gosh, these are chic gold hats.
Exactly. I was like, if they're going to be in all the pictures, probably, they can't be.
True.
They can't
very,
be.
Very, very, very true.
And then, as expected, like, my husband had his crown on when we were cutting the cake.
Actually, so thinking about it, that's impeccable forward thinking on your part, Lily.
So they had to be, I mean, they were still paper crowns, let's be real. They were not
anything.
They
had to meet the mark, though. They had to stand up to what was surrounding it, yeah.
After that, it was dancing. And I used to be in a wedding band. I used to play the saxophone in a wedding band. And so I had my band play. The Saloon Stars is what they're called. They're amazing. We played it. Like Dominic West's wedding in Ireland.
This, I never knew this. This is a revelation to me.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I mean, I didn't play. My husband was begging me to play the saxophone. I didn't play at the wedding, but they played and they were epic. And then we had a DJ after.
And then didn't go to bed until 5:30.
And then, yeah, didn't go to sleep, had our cheat. There's a, what's it called? Bowling alley in the basement. So, at like 4 or 3 or something, we went to the bowling alley with the other people that were still up, and then had a little cheese, and then went to bed and had a little breakfast with everyone in the morning, and then headed off on our merry way to Clifton.
So that was the start of your honeymoon, and you went straight off?
We went to Clifton. My parents went to Clifton after their wedding and had a lovely few nights there. And then I really wanted to be at home for Christmas and everything. In the new year, we went to Mauritius. Yeah, went to sort of 4 fabulous hotels. And
so actually, you had your wedding, a bit of downtime in the countryside, the whirl of Christmas, and then kind of rounded it off with this idyllic kind of location hopping in Mauritius.
Exactly right.
Oh, beautiful. I mean, congratulations, because you just nailed the whole dream wedding scenario for me.
We had so much fun. It was just the best day, best few days ever.
How does it make you feel to look back on it now?
I mean, we're already planning our 10-year anniversary. And I want it to be I want it to be the same venues, same everything. But we had the best, we're the best day ever. It was, we just had so much fun. I was so, as you know, sometimes planning can have its stressful moments, but I just wanted to make sure that we all just had the best time on the day. A piece of advice I was given, which I did, was the day before the wedding, I gave my phone to my most trustworthy girlfriend, because you're always going to have those guests that might call up and say, I'm stuck on the motorway. What's the venue called again? So you don't want to be, it's too late for that for you. It's like, if there's something that's like critical, like someone can't come, again, I'd rather she just deals with it, takes out the seat and just manages all the texts coming in. And then obviously there was some text that was just like wishing me a lovely day, which then I got to read afterwards. But it just meant that any stress was kept at bay.
I've loved being taken through the, I mean, it was such a treat. I was so looking forward to this episode because, like I said, I ate it up when it was all sort of coming out. And we obviously knew it was going to be a sensational one, but just such a joyful occasion. So unique as well, I would say. And like, you're wanting to get timeless down, then I'd say you definitely did.
Thank you so much. Honestly, it's been amazing.
Thanks so much for listening to Words in a Wedding. If you liked the episode, please subscribe if you haven't already, and follow @WordsOnAWedding on Instagram, where you'll find guest wedding photos and much, much more. Have a great week.